We're reading from Genesis chapter 1, starting at verse 26, which is mainly on page 4, but starts on page 3. Genesis chapter 1, starting at verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. These will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so.
Good evening, everyone. The lights will gradually return in a moment or two. My name is Neil. I'm one of the pastors here. Welcome to you if you are new to us this evening. That video is quite mind-blowing, isn't it? Just to understand the size of planet Earth in the scale of the universe. When asked whether he believed in God, Stephen Hawking replied, "We are such insignificant creatures on a minor planet, on a very average star, in the outer suburbs of one of 100,000 million galaxies. So it is difficult to believe in a God that would care about us or even notice our existence. Sir Patrick Moore, the astronomer, was once asked what he considers as he gazes at the stars from his observatory. And Sir Patrick Moore said, "We are a very, very small speck in the universe, about as important as a single ant in the whole of the world." So how should we think of ourselves as human beings? Do you notice there, Patrick Moore says that because we're small, we're unimportant. Well, the book of Genesis that we've been looking at for a number of weeks now, and we're returning to again this evening, is seeking to answer that question. What does it mean to be human? And what is our place in the world and in God's universe? And Genesis tells us that our place shouldn't be measured simply by our size. It's not how big or small we are relative to other things in the universe that indicates our relative importance. What does it mean to be human? Well, Genesis tells us that we really are, in God's eyes, the center of the universe. We are unique in all creation. We are, you could say, the climax of all that God has made or will make. And that's powerfully made in Genesis chapter 1, isn't it, as an argument? Genesis 1 is teaching us that in the grand scheme of things, human beings matter to God. And that Stephen Hawking is wrong in his conclusion. And we matter to God, actually, an awful lot. The first clue, please do turn back to that reading, page 3 of the Bible, is it, I think? Yeah, page 3. The first clue to our importance is the amount of space that God gives over to our creation in this account, Genesis chapter 1. As one writer comments, the creation of humanity gets more column inches than anything else in all of creation. All of verse 26 through to verse 30. So it's the amount of space we're given in the account. The second clue is that God pauses and deliberates before he creates human beings. But the biggest clue is that we as human beings are unique in all of creation because we alone bear his image. Human beings occupy a very special and privileged position. Verse 26, "Then God said, 'Let us make mankind in our image.'" And then again, verse 27, "So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them." Three times, we're told, human beings are special and unique in all of God's creation. We have that privileged position. Freeman Dyson didn't invent the vacuum cleaner. He is, in fact, a theoretical physicist and mathematician. And he says, as we look out into the universe and identify the many accidents of physics and astronomy that have worked together to our benefit, it almost seems as if the universe must in some sense have known that we were coming. That's a scientist trying to say, it's as if it were made with us in mind. It's as if everything that had happened up to this point was made for human beings. And of course, Genesis chapter 1 is God saying, that's exactly what I said when I wrote the Bible. We could literally say, this really is our world. And this idea that human beings are the pinnacle of creation is again quite unlike all of the other pagan ideas doing the rounds in the day of Israel. The ancient Babylonians had their account of creation, Atrahasis, it's called. And here's just a couple of lines from it. "Belil Ili, the womb goddess, is present. Let her create a mortal man so that he may bear the yoke. So that he may bear the yoke, the work of Elil. Let man bear the load of the gods." See, in that creation account, humanity are just the slaves of the gods. But what God says to us in Genesis chapter 1 is no. We are rulers of God's world under his lordship, uniquely made in his image. Human beings have extraordinary dignity and privilege and position because we alone are made in the image of God. We'll come to that point in a moment. We are made like the animals, and yet we're distinct from the animals. Genesis says that we're unique, but it does say we're kind of like the rest of creation in some sense. Look, God made the animals and human beings on the sixth day. God blessed the animals that he had made, and he blessed human beings on the sixth day. And both are given the commandment, be fruitful and multiply. So in one sense, we are like the rest of the created order, and particularly animals in the first instance. We're made from the same stuff. That means, again, that I don't think Genesis would take any issue or have any particular problem with the fact that human beings share, 95%? Of the same DNA as a chimpanzee? Personally, I don't have a problem even with the idea that in making us, God used a common ancestor. But that's another debate. We are the same as the rest of creation in one sense on day six. We're not gods. We're creatures. You and I are not special because of anything in us. And yet, we're profoundly special because we bear God's image. So we read verse 26, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule. Do you see that? God reflects before creating humankind, and someone has suggested it's as if God is going to be directly involved in our creation. It's so important, specifically important, that God presses pause, and then there's this dialogue or discussion between the Trinity. Let us make mankind in our image. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit determined to create human beings to be their image bearers in the world. Well, what difference does it make to you and to me to conclude that we bear his image? Well, I think it makes a massive difference, actually. Pretty big things follow from a statement like that. Our whole understanding of the sanctity, the sacredness of human life flows from Genesis chapter 1. It's here that we learn that every human life is special, has inherent dignity. It's here in Genesis chapter 1 that you learn that you are worth much to God. If I broke you down into your constituent components, I am told there'd be 35 litres of water, 20 kilos of carbon, 4 litres of ammonia, 1.5 kilos of lime, some phosphorus, salt, sulphur, some other things as well, enough iron to make a nail and all the rest of it. And it's been estimated that the value of all of that is about £10. That's what you're worth, 10 quid. But Genesis 1 tells us otherwise, doesn't it? You and I are precious in God's sight. You are fearfully and wonderfully made by God in his image. And I think a number of us have issues with self-worth, don't we? Wondering perhaps what our parents make of us, or others at work, or our university colleague friends. We struggle with identities of importance and issues, and yet we see in Genesis chapter 1 that our identity is derived and our place is secured by what it means for us to bear God's image. You're worth much to God. And of course, if you're an image bearer, then so are all the other people you're looking at right now. And of course, every other human being you shall ever meet. And it means that all human beings are worth much to God as well. A couple of implications, I think, from recognizing that every human being is special. We should respect human life. If you're here as a Christian and you believe that every human being bears God's image, then surely that means you'll want to treat each person you meet on the fact that they represent God. That you will want to show a proper respect for people. You won't judge people on the basis of the clothes that they wear, or where they come from, or what football team or rugby team they support, or what course they're doing, or whether they sound posher than you, have more money, are better looking, or anything else. You will recognize in every human being, from the greatest to the least, that they are of great worth in God's eyes, and therefore they matter to you. Everyone. So if you're here as a student, one of the ways in which you can really stand out as a Christian at your university is your desire to be generous to everyone you meet. to make time for them. It might mean not choosing to hang out with all of those who are clever or intelligent or cool, but you'll choose to hang out with someone who's finding university hard, who's maybe a little bit shy, who's yet to really find their place. But you say, that person matters to God. And therefore I'm going to recognize that in the way in which I treat them. Recognizing that every human being bears the image of God means you won't mock people or ridicule people according to their looks or abilities. James picks up this verse in chapter 3 and verse 9 when he says, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. And of course, particularly when we're gathered together as the church, as God's people, we will want to speak words to build one another up. We will want to acknowledge every member of our community as a church family, because we know that they have inherent dignity. So we'll respect all human life, knowing that we're made in God's image, and we'll also protect human life too. The sanctity of life means that we'll protect the most vulnerable members of society, children who have no voice because they're as yet unborn, those who are at the end of their lives who fear being a burden on others. It was his strong Christian worldview that led William Wilberforce to fight the slave trade here in England. The Christians will seek to protect the vulnerable and to care for the needy. That's why we're collecting that food on the table over there. That's going to go to the Birmingham City Mission Food Bank. Around 200 people use that food bank because they otherwise wouldn't eat. So we're collecting food to say they are people who matter to God, and we're going to collect this food and give it to the City Mission, and they will distribute it according to need. And don't think it's just one week you could choose to give. You can bring food any week and we'll get it to the City Mission so that you can play your part in recognizing that. Christians have an opportunity to be distinctive here, don't we? The Roman Emperor Julian, who lived in the 4th century, was the last emperor of Rome to persecute Christians. He was called Julian the Apostate. But he acknowledged this of Christians. He called them atheists because they didn't have a temple and they didn't have statues. So he called them atheists. But he's talking about Christians. He said, atheism has been specially advanced through the loving service rendered to who? To strangers. And through their care for the burial of the dead. That is, in other words, finding dead bodies and choosing to treat that dead body with dignity and to bury it. It is a scandal. There is not a single Jew who is a beggar. And that the godless Galileans care not only for their own poor, but for ours as well. While those who belong to us look in vain for the help that we should render them. So there's the emperor saying, wow, Christians live differently, don't they? How do I see it? It's the way they treat the poor, the vulnerable, the marginalized, the needy. Because Christians see that they matter to God. They're in his image. He says, isn't it interesting that Christians do what no one else does? In the Roman world, infanticide was quite common, which is that if you had a baby and you didn't want to keep that baby, you would take it up to a hill and leave it to die of hypothermia in the cold of the night. And the Christians would go out looking for the babies under the rule of Julian. They'd go looking for abandoned children, and then they would raise them as their own. And he knew it. That's the Christian worldview. That's the power of Genesis chapter 1. We bear God's image. Compassion and care for the underprivileged has its roots in a Christian worldview. If you believe all we are of no importance, just like an ant in the size of the world, like Sir Patrick Moore, that doesn't exactly drive you to compassion, does it? When you say every single life matters, everyone, you live differently. Well, what does it mean for us to bear God's image in the world? What does that actually mean? We've seen what it is. What does it mean? Well, we're made to represent God. You see, God is ruling from outside of the universe, looking over everything that he has made. But humanity are meant to be here on earth, the visible, physical representation of God in the world. Someone has written, God is a different league of person from us, but God is a person like us, unlike the rest of the creation, of course. He's not an abstract force or a principle, So despite the huge differences, Genesis says that we're made in God's image. Human beings are the kind of entity God would be if God were earthly. The best book we're recommending, if you want to get to grips with these early chapters of Genesis, is Alistair Payne's The First Chapters of Everything. And he says this. He says, if you want to see the entity that most closely resembles God in our world, you have only to look in the mirror. You won't find anything in all of creation that comes close to being God-like than human beings. So just as God speaks, God acts, God makes, God works, he's made us in his likeness. It's not as if God could have been a cow or a horse. Only human beings were made God-like, thinking, speaking, making, working. And only because we're like him was it possible for God to enter into our world in the person of his son, Jesus, a human being, to bear God's image for all the world to see. So we're made to represent God. We're the only thing that comes close to what God is like. We're also made for relationship with God. We're made like God not just so that we can reflect him to the rest of the world. We're made like God so that we can communicate with him. Do you notice again that in Genesis 1, God speaks to humanity. God doesn't speak to the rest of creation. He just makes it. He just declares that this is how it needs to be and this is how it will be. But then, verse 28, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. The truth is, to be human, to be truly human, is to be in a relationship with God. And I recognize in a group this size this evening, there will be for some of us that will be a brand new idea. That we can't be fully human until and unless we know God. And we're living our lives with him and for him. But that's what Genesis 1 is saying. Made by God, for God. Right now, some of you would say, well, I don't know God. I'm kind of looking, I'm interested, but I wouldn't say I knew God. Well, Genesis 1 gives you all that encouragement to begin that journey. And we have something called Christianity Explored. You had it in your notice sheet, and that tells you everything about how to get going in your thinking about could I, should I, would I ever be a Christian? Okay, just have a look at that in your own time. And if you are a Christian, then of course you know that God has made you in his image for a relationship with you. You alone can relate to God, unlike the rest of creation. And of course, like all relationships, communication is meant to take place. So I wonder whether you're making it a personal priority to allow God to speak to you day by day. And whether you're ready to listen to his voice and to obey. Someone has suggested we can make a useful comparison by comparing how we think of the Bible relative to how we think of our mobile phones. Someone has suggested this as a standard or as a test. What if we carried our Bible like we carry our mobile phones? What if we flipped through our Bible several times a day like we do our mobile phones? What if we treated our Bible like we couldn't live without it? Can you imagine, I've forgotten my Bible. I need to go back home. What if we gave a Bible as a gift to our kids like we give them phones? What if we brought a Bible with us when we traveled? What if we used a Bible in case of emergency? Feel free to phone 999 as well at the same time. What if we treated our Bible? What if we said, I'm made for a relationship with God. That's my place in the creation. I need to put that at the center because it's not being right now. So we're made to represent God to the world. There's nothing like God apart from human beings. We're made to know God and being in a relationship with him personally. Thirdly, we're made to rule under God. Do you see that in verse 26? God deliberates, says, why am I making human beings? Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule. Do you see that in 26? And then again in 28, he says, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth, subdue it, rule over the fish. There we have it again. Do you see? Man is, in that sense, God's vice regent. God's representative rulers on earth. And we're going to look a little bit at what that means next week when in particular we think about work. What is our work about? Why do we work? And what does it mean that it's an expression of this rule that we have over creation? So come back next week. If you need some motivation for your work, for your studies, to get out of bed on a Monday morning, that's where we're going to be next week. So I'm not going to say a great deal about that this evening. And of course, we're made male and female to fulfill our role. Striking to note that the animals are not described as being male and female, but human beings are here in verse 27. If we're to fill the earth and subdue and rule over it, then men and women together, coming together in marriage to form families, are the only way in which we're going to be able to fulfill our God-given purpose. It's our sexual complementarity, in other words, that means it's possible for us to fulfill all that God has called on us to do, male and female, bearing God's image together. Well, we could ask, of course, what do we think now has happened to us as image bearers as a result of the fall? Are we still in God's image after Genesis chapter 3? So I can see in an ideal world, before human beings ever turned their back on God, as they do in Genesis chapter 3, that in one sense we were God's representatives, ruling over the world for him. What about now? Now that human beings have gone a long, long way from God. What about now, when rather than ruling for God, we've set ourselves up against God? Well, there's no doubt that in one sense, the way in which we bear God's image is fundamentally broken. Because we can no longer be in communion with God unless our sin has been dealt with. Just as Adam and Eve were excluded from the Garden of Eden, that relationship with God is broken. And it took the death of Jesus Christ that we'll be celebrating in the Lord's Supper in a few minutes' time to put us right with God. But in another sense, we still continue to be, of course, image bearers, albeit fragmented and broken in the way in which we represent God to the world, because we still are unique in all of creation. We still bear God's image as we have that unique capacity to rule over the created order. We might do it poorly. We might do it unjustly. In some instances, we do it very tragically. But human beings still rule, don't they? This is a Greenpeace leaflet that was pushed through my door a few years ago. It said, "Planet Earth is 4,600 million years old. If we condense this inconceivable time span into an understandable concept, we can liken the Earth to a person 46 years of age. Nothing is known about the first 7 years of this person's life. And whilst only scattered information exists about the middle span, we know that at the age of 42, the Earth began to flower. Dinosaurs and the great reptiles didn't appear until 1 year ago, when the planet was 45. Mammals arrived only 8 months ago, and in the middle of last week, man-like apes evolved into ape-like men. At the weekend, the last ice age developed the Earth. Modern man has been around for 4 hours. During the last hour, man discovered agriculture. The Industrial Revolution began a minute ago. And during those 60 seconds of biological time, modern man has made a rubbish tip of paradise. He has multiplied his numbers to plague-like proportions, caused the extinction of 5,500 species of animals, ransacked the planets for fuel, and now stands like a brutish infant, gloating over his meteoric rise to ascendancy, on the brink of war to end all wars. A human life in this time span lasts a mere 18 seconds. Let's not waste any more precious time." So there's Greenpeace reflecting on what it means as human beings who've turned our backs on God, who now, rather than serving God and caring for his creation, have instead sought to abuse the trust that God has given us. Well, finally, what hope then for humanity? The image bearers, who still in one sense bear that so weakly and choose to use it so poorly, what hope for humanity? Well, Jesus is the image of the invisible God. The answer, you won't be surprised to hear me say, is Jesus is the hope for humanity. Jesus, as God's Son, comes into the world the image of the invisible God, Colossians 1, verse 16 tells us. To look at a human being and think you can really know the character of God is now totally unreliable. But to look at Jesus, we begin to see how he represents God to the world. In Jesus, we can once again discover what it means to be human. And if we're Christians, we can look at Jesus and see, that's what I'm supposed to be like. That is true humanity. Here is the second Adam who shows me what it is to love God and to love my neighbor and to care for the world that God has given into our hands. Jesus was made like us in every way, yet without sin. So if you want to know what humanity was meant to be like in Genesis 1, before the fall, look at Jesus and the way in which he lived. And if you want to know what humanity is going to be like when God restores this broken world to the perfect world that he always intended in the new creation, if you want to know what we'll be like then, look at Jesus. He is God's image bearer in the world. And because he bears that image perfectly, when we look at him, we can see just what God is like. So we're not playing guessing games anymore about the character and nature of God. We look at Jesus, the image of the invisible God, and we see what God is like and what we will one day be like. That gives us great confidence, doesn't it? To know that work that God is doing in us and for us. Jesus, the new humanity, the second image. So what is our place in the universe? Well, perhaps not the conclusion that that video reached, or Stephen Hawking, or Patrick Moore. Genesis 1 says we may not be the biggest thing in the universe, but we alone are special, because we alone are made by God to bear his image. And despite the sin that has marred the image of God within us, God, through Jesus Christ, has restored us to his Father, and that means we as the church, as God's people gradually being renewed and transformed into the likeness of Christ, have that opportunity to show to the world once more what it really means to be human. And as they see that in us, to say, I want a life like that. That's a life that looks good. That's a life that I should have. Let's pray together. In Psalm 8, we read, what is mankind that you are mindful of them? Human beings that you care for them. Almighty God, we in one sense are no bigger than an ant in all the world. And yet you love us. You have given us that place of honor as your image bearers in your world. And then, of course, in your Son, you came to bear away our sin, that Jesus might restore us to your image and your likeness. So we thank you and ask you that we would live well, not just today, but in our days and years ahead, to be those who truly represent you to the world, that others may look and see what we were all meant to be, and what in Jesus Christ we all can one day be. Amen.